10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
You're wearing what? What are you doing?
Sterling, every damn night from sea to shining sea.
Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday night. Good evening. This is our national radio show brought to you locally on this radio station. Let me explain. Every week, it's an actual radio show on Sunday night, made for Sunday night. There's no other station in this city that has it. It's Sterling every damn night. I'm Walter Sterling. I will explain this show to you. It's different than the other shows because it's good. And the other reason it's different is because for most of my life, I was a suit. I wore wingtip shoes, Brooks Brothers suits, white shirts. I was that guy. I stood in front of the room and gave powerful PowerPoints. And then I was like, well, I've done that for a long time and I'm done. I don't want to do it anymore. What do I want to do? And I asked a friend of mine named Chris Olivero, who's now the chief, business officer of some media company. And he said, well, did you ever think of doing a talk show? Well, the dirty secret is I had them. I had done them. And I gave it up to wear a suit. But now I get to talk to you every Sunday night, and I get to share information about the life that you and I have, our day, our daily life, the check engine light, water in the basement, trouble with the boss, trouble with people at work, trouble. Rarely do I go beyond our house, but there's been a story that keeps pounding on TMZ and other media outlets. Savannah Guthrie's mom, one of the regular features on Sterling Every Damn Sunday is Vic Ferrari. And I've asked him to give us an update from a detective's point of view about this incredible story about Nancy Guthrie, Savannah Guthrie's mother, the NBC Today host. And there's endless breaking news. We're now in 10th day of this poor 84-year-old woman disappearing and met much controversy about how the local sheriff has handled it, the FBI has handled it. Vic Ferrari, retired police detective living in Florida, to make us jealous. Vic, from your perspective, with your friends, when you talk about this case, how do you feel it's being handled? What's your belief in what's going on?
Well, my heart goes out to law enforcement right now with this case because it's such a high-profile abduction/kidnapping. So you've got the news all over this. They're probably combing the neighborhood just as much as the FBI and local police. So, and anytime the police try to do something, it gets covered immediately and second guessed. So right now, law enforcement has a very difficult time with the media all over them about this.
And do you feel when you look at it and you know the rhythm of a murder investigation, you know the rhythm of a kidnapping investigation, does this look that it's on track, slow, fast? What's your opinion?
I think it's picking up steam. They were able to identify that backpack that the guy in the video at the front door was wearing, and it's sold exclusively at Walmart. So what they're going to do now is they'll probably, in the greater Tucson area, at every Walmart, they're going to try to figure out who purchased that backpack. Now, obviously, it's going to be a couple hundred people, but even if the person paid cash, they still walked out of that Walmart where there's a million and one cameras. So I think that's going to help to narrow it down.
When you investigated kidnappings or murders, when you walked into the scene, what was the first thing as a detective you did? What was the very first thing you did when you walked into a crime scene?
Well, there's the initial shock, you know, to see someone dead laying on a floor. But you want to take a step back and just kind of observe everything, see if something's staged, it's one of those things with a homicide investigation. You want to make sure you don't want things taken away right away. Because sometimes a second set of eyes, the longer you look at something, the more your mind can process it. And right now, what they're starting to discover is now they're finding rubber gloves all over the place. That broke earlier today. So they've found, like, on the walkway to this woman's home, they found several set of gloves. Now, is that the abductor making mistakes and leaving them behind, or is that to throw the police off?
Do you find it unusual for a kidnapping that there was no ransom note left, no accountability left at the scene? do you find it suspicious that without a ransom note, without a specific piece of evidence that this woman was kidnapped, this could be some random clown trolling them, sending them emails saying, I have this woman, this is the money I want. They've produced no evidence that they have her dead or alive.
That's very true, and would lead to your theory that this could just be some random kook that thought it was a good idea to abduct this woman. When you watch that ring door, well, it's not ring, but whatever the camera is when the person approaches the door, they've got what appears to be a handgun in this makeshift holster that's kind of strapped to the front, kind of covering their junk. I've never seen someone, bad guys, good guys, carry a gun that way. So I kind of think it's someone that's really out there.
You have no respect for this kidnapper is what you're saying.
No, none whatsoever.
This is not a professional.
I don't believe so. I think there's more than one person involved to get an 80-something-year-old woman out of a house in the middle of the night startled. I think there was a vehicle parked up the block. I think there was at least one other person involved in this. I can't just see one person breaking into a woman's house in the middle of the night and then getting her to leave the house in the middle of the night. I just think there's more than one person involved in this.
Possibly they knocked her out and carried her out.
That's possible, but what they're saying now is the blood that they found on the walkway came from her nose. So what they think is she either from excitement got a nosebleed, or maybe they socked her in the nose. I don't think she was carried. I think she was kind of dragged.
What do you think the next step is going to be for law enforcement to find her, discover her? What do you think the next step is?
I think there's people out there that know damn well who did this. Harvey Levin from TMZ has been in contact with someone who he seems to think is credible, that knows who this is, and they want money and assurances up front that if this goes wrong, that their life won't be in danger. I think between the backpack and the more time goes on, and the odds of this woman surviving all this, unfortunately, is not good. So I think there's going to be a break in the case before the end of the weekend.
They kept saying, the Guthries kept saying, she has medicine that she must have. There are only two that I can think of, insulin for diabetes and blood pressure medicine. Not having either of those is not good for this woman at 84 years of age, nothing she can fake. Vic Ferrari, a retired police detective, a daily presence on Sterling every damn night, I am very fortunate to have you as a friend. And Midnight Misfits are very fortunate to have you protecting us. Thanks very much, Vic. Safe flight today. Thank you, sir.
Take care.
I have an email. It's waltermsterling@gmail.com, waltermsterling@gmail.com. I'm happy to report that this week I've had no water in the basement. I happen to believe about the Guthrie story that my theory is it's the son-in-law and maybe some of his buddies. I think he had dinner with her. He didn't like the conversation. It was about his inheritance, whether or not he was going to inherit any money. She probably said something he didn't like, and he was like, done. He's like, okay. Or somebody murders her on purpose. And then they realize, oh my God, what are we going to do? And what they had to do was pretend it was a kidnapping. I don't believe it was a kidnapping because have we seen any evidence that she either was kidnapped or is alive? I don't think we have, and that's odd. And they didn't leave a ransom note, also odd. Anybody could be sending these emails saying, yes, we want all of this money, but they could just be trolls. I think it's a horrible end. I think the story is going to end very poorly with the fact that she's been dead since that night. All right, it's Sunday Night in America with Walter Sterling, and this is Sterling every damn Sunday night.
Sterling, Sterling.
All right, it's Sterling every damn Sunday night. Yes, we are here every damn Sunday night on big radio stations. Big radio stations like KFBK Sacramento, WGAN in Maine. We only are on big radio stations. That's the rule. I said only put me on big radio stations, and that's why I'm on this radio station. KFBK FM, baby. FM in Kansas City, home of the prettiest women you have ever seen in your life. And a remarkable plaza at Christmas. When you and I think of Christmas, we don't think of Kansas City. But I'll tell you, the plaza at Christmas in Kansas City is wonderful. That's the right word. It's not spectacular. It's wonderful. Most of the restaurants are owned by one guy, kindly, brilliant restaurateur. In my opinion, the best airport to fly into is the Kansas City airport. The plane pulls up to the gate. Get this. This is like airport porn. The planes pull up to the gate, and from the gate, you can see the parking lot, and you can see your car. Compare that to any other airport where it is a life event to get from your gate to your car. In Atlanta, JFK, or God help you if you have to go to O'Hare, to go from the gate to your car, that's a camping trip. I hope you brought gear, a tent, the special camping food that's unidentifiable, but you'll eat it because you're really hungry. That's what you need to get from the gate to the car. In my experience, physics, the longest distance between any two points is anywhere at O'Hare Airport. I do anything when I'm forced to go into Chicago and against my will to land at Midway, a very nice airport. I used to say terrible things about LaGuardia, but if you've ever been there recently, oh my God, it is magnificent. Never has an airport been turned into something quite so spectacular in quite so long a time, involving so many angry unions working together back to back. Really spectacular. I'm Walter Sterling. A terrible thing happened to our kids a couple of years ago when my oldest kid was in second or third grade. She had a paper or project due pretty soon. And I said to her, what is the deadline on that project? She said, the deadline is next Wednesday, but I can talk to the teacher. I mean, what do you mean you can talk to the teacher? I can talk to the teacher. And it's Wednesday, but I can get it to a different day. What day can you get it to? And I'm thinking the next day. Oh, I could probably get it pushed to next Friday, 10 days from that day. How? Is this completely unimportant that it's not, doesn't have a deadline? Well, no, sometimes things happen and I can change the deadline with the teacher. What I learned is there's something happened in these schools that did not happen with you and me. And no, not that. It's, they can negotiate deadlines. They could negotiate deadlines from first grade. There is no hard deadline. Oh, I'm supposed to take that test on Tuesday, but I'm going to take it on Wednesday. I didn't feel good. I've got to go to the doctor. I have never seen anything like it. Occasionally, if I had a written note and a real doctor appointment, and it was non-negotiable, I could probably get something moved in school if I had a doctor's note, a parent note on good stationery, not the crappy stationery that you use now, real Cartier stationery. I might be able to get something changed. The result of this, you're thinking, oh, that's nice. There's less pressure on these kids. No, there's not less pressure on the kids. There would be less pressure on you and me. In order for a negotiable deadline to be a pressure relief valve, you have to feel pressure from a deadline. In your mind, deadlines have to be very important, very urgent, non-negotiable for somebody to say you really don't have to do it that day. Oh, thank God. Because in your mind and mine, a deadline is a deadline. And the thought that this is negotiable never enters my equation or yours. And that's new. And what that has done to a generation of kids is destroyed their ability at executive functioning. Now, I never heard of have you ever heard of executive functioning when you were in school? No. You never heard of that. That's because it wasn't a thing. You were not taught hard deadlines. You were not given hard deadlines. Therefore, you did not have to work out when to do something first, second, third, or fourth. That's executive functioning, where they teach a kid how to put something in order. Well, you learn how to put something in order if you have hard deadlines. They don't have any hard deadlines. It's all floating around in their brain. They don't know what to do next. And the result is it all lands on the same date and time in their head. They think everything in their head is due now because they weren't told otherwise. They're given 10 assignments, 10 different due dates, but it's okay. You don't have to hit them. Now you're in third grade. You're in fourth grade. What do you do with that? That's what happens in their brain. It just floats around. They don't know when it should land. And then because it's up to them when the deadline is, it's an anxiety-provoking event. It's up to me. How am I supposed to know when math is due versus English versus science versus this panorama I'm supposed to make? How am I supposed to know when something is due? You're in fourth or fifth grade. You don't know anything's due. You want to watch cartoons on your iPhone, and you want to avoid your parents. In fifth grade, you don't know if math is more important than English or history. What is a relief to you and me, a negotiable deadline, is a burden to somebody who's never had a deadline. Somebody who doesn't know what the difference is between math and English in terms of what's important. But that's what's happened in the elementary schools across the country. They're allowed to negotiate deadlines. Junior high, middle school, high school, they're negotiating deadlines without any ability to judge what's more important. They've never been taught, and this is more important. They're like, oh, we'll do it when you feel like it. Well, they are never feeling like it. They want to watch their iPhones, which is not a bad thing. If I had a choice of doing five assignments or looking at TikTok, I would look at the girls on TikTok. Why? Because I'm a horrible person. That's what executive functioning is. The reason it's a new skill is because it was never taught. Oh, well, they have trouble. Look at the reports your kids get. Problems with executive functioning. Yeah, did you give the kids deadlines all the way, all through school? Did they get deadlines? Deadlines is what teaches executive functioning. The teacher says this is due on this date, and that doesn't move. And then this is due on this date, and it doesn't move. That's how you learn what's important. That's how you learn executive functioning. But there's no relief from a deadline that's moved if you never thought it was important in the first place. It's no relief of pressure. I think that's what they were trying to do with the negotiable deadlines. And I was shocked when I heard about it. I thought my kid was fibbing, not lying. That's different. That's when they steal dollars out of my wallet. That's a whole different thing. A whole different thing. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Walter Sterling. I have a webpage I'd love you to look at, Walter Sterling Show. You can learn everything about this dumb show. I put up new pictures this week. New pictures have gone up. You get to see where I work. I want to see where you work. The way that works is you send me a photo of whatever you're looking at right now. I enjoy it. You can't believe how much I love those. And it's at Walter Sterling. What is it? Walter Sterling Show is the webpage. And WalterMSterling@gmail is the email account.
Walter Sterling makes your evening peculiar. Sterling every damn night.
They tried to cancel poor Sydney Sweeney. Because she said she had great genes. They said she was promoting white supremacy, but we all knew they were full of beans.
1, 2, 3, 4, we all want to see some more.
Now we've got itsy bitsy teeny weeny lingerie from Sydney Sweeney that we saw for the first time today. Itsy bitsy teeny weeny lingerie from Sydney Sweeney. If you don't like it, you're probably gay.
In production number 1416, and it's take one.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
Stand by. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
On the music, John.
Get ready to match the stars. Charlie's Angels, David Doyle.
And put in 2.
Brett Summers.
And put in 1.
Charles Nelson Reddy.
And put in 2.
From Nash, Loretta Smith.
And put in 1.
Joey Mitchell.
And put in 2.
And Fanny Clay.
And
wasn't that incredible? The opening to the match game, which you can see right now on Game Show Network. Basically, Game Show Network shows What's My Line and Match Game all day. And it's seductive because you and I viewed it when it was live and real as popcorn. You ate some, you threw it away, you started dinner, you did your homework. But now it's a show. And what's stunning to me about the Match Game and what's my line and to tell the truth, and I've got a secret, these were all produced by the same guy, Mark Goodson. Mark Goodson and his partner, Bill Todman, and they got along very well. And then I think Bill passed away. But Mark Goodson was the creative force. He was the one who took a game that was rough and not really constructed well, and he figured out how to make it work. And I learned some amazing things about Mark Goodson and Bill Todman. They produced, created Family Feud. All right, great show. You enjoy Family Feud. Depends on the host. Much argument. Think about all the different people who have hosted Family Feud. And what do you do? What do you remember? Richard Dawson. I don't think he actually hosted it more than anybody else, but the guy from Tool Time was the host, remember? And the narrator of the great dog show, that guy, he did it for a while. And now this guy's doing it. But what's amazing about Family Feud is that they rehearsed it for a year and a half before it went on the air. They rehearsed every possible screw-up with that game before it went on the air. And then Richard Dawson quit. He was on a couple years. He got tired of it. He quit. Then he wanted to come back. And they sort of begged him to come back and do it. Whoever was doing it in between was not Richard Dawson. Well, there was a problem. They talked to Richard. They met with him. And he was fat. And there's okay fat. And then there's too fat for TV. Well, he was way too fat for TV. So they said, all right, the condition under which you will come back and host Family Feud again is that you will lose this weight. And they set up a production date, staffed it, spent the money to get the show ready to tape. Richard shows up on tape day, and he's fatter. And now they have to put him on the air, and he's fatter. He's like really fat. And I don't mean to be catty, but I do. Later, years after the show stopped being in production with him, they interviewed him, and now he's Jabba the Hutt. When that man passed away, he was huge. He was huge. You think about him on Match Game, he was a good-looking, skinny guy. When Family Feud started, he was a good-looking, skinny guy. But now he was not. It was a real problem they had. They had a real problem with him. The thing that amazes me most about Mark Goodson's shows, I've Got a Secret, What's My Line, Match Game, the thing that's really impressive is we can see them. That means that at the beginning of these cycles, these were recorded on 2-inch wide videotape. Think about that. The videotape was 2 inches wide, and that was very expensive tape. So Mark Goodson made a decision way when they were making kinescopes of What's My Line, to record and save every show he ever did. And he recorded and saved every show he ever did long before anybody thought there was value in reruns. Anybody thought there'd ever be a value in seeing a 25-year-old game show. Who'd want to see that? But he knew there'd be some value. I'm sure he couldn't know what it would be. But darn it, he produced these shows. He worked forever on these shows, and he's going to keep them. Which reminds me, I got to record this show. Walter M. Sterling, this is a radio show coast to coast from WGAN to KFBK to WPHT, Delaware 105.9. Welcome, Sterling, every damn Sunday night.
Sterling every night, the car barn is alive, neon lights flicker, the patrons talking jive.
Walter, on tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, New York's finest will be carrying newer and safer, but longer-range stun guns this year, part of a slew of department upgrades announced by Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch on Tuesday. The Big Apple's top cop said during her annual State of the NYPD address that the department will equip officers with the Taser 10, introduced by Axon in 2023. The upgraded stun gun has a 45-foot range and carries 10 probes and has a reduced 1,000-volt capacity compared to a 12-foot range, 2-probed, and maximum juice of 50,000 volts for the Taser 7 that NYPD cops are currently equipped with. Now, tasers were introduced to give officers another option in high-risk encounters to slow down, create space, and reduce the likelihood that an encounter ends in deadly force, according to the police commissioner. But in too many of those moments, the technology wasn't effective enough to make a difference, she added. That's why we're improving our use of force alternatives by introducing the Taser 10. The upgraded model allows officers to operate from a greater distance with more precision and more opportunity to resolve situations before they turn lethal. The NYPD launched a test pilot program for the new tasers in December and are expected to begin using them sometime in spring, according to police. During my time with the NYPD, tasers were relatively new, and the only people that could carry them was the emergency service division, and then later on, the patrol supervisors would carry them. They didn't want cops having these things. Now the big rush is to get these things into cops' hands. I'm kind of suspect about this actual device because they've reduced the amount of current. They've got more prongs but less current, and a lot of these guys are on drugs or really angry, and they can pull these prongs out and then come after the cops. During my time with the NYPD, I really didn't have any encounters with these things and never saw it used until I retired and I got a job with a small police department down in Florida. And they all carried these tasers. And I remember part of my training was I had to be zapped. And I didn't want any part of it, but they told me, listen, if you want to continue with the training, you got to get zapped with the taser. So my zapping was first thing in the morning. I made sure I didn't eat breakfast, didn't have any coffee, because I didn't want to soil myself. I didn't want to lose control of my bodily functions. They didn't shoot me with this thing. What they did was they taped a lead from the taser under my armpit and another one to my crotch, if you can picture that. And two guys stood in back of me and they said, you ready? I said, yep. The guy hit a switch and for 5 seconds I had St. Vitus dance until I woke up. I didn't like it. I'd rather be maced, but that was my taser story. So for more behind the scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD Behind the Blue Wall of Silence.
Sterling, Walter Sterling.
Walter Sterling, good evening. It's a radio show from coast to coast, from WGAN in Maine to KFBK in Sacramento, KMBZ FM in Kansas City, WPHT 50,000 watts in Philadelphia. I'm Walter Sterling every damn Sunday night. Email waltermsterling@gmail.com. Webpage, Walter Sterling Show. You're driving across the country. Where do you want to check in?
Everybody knows it's about to be meth head summer.
Have you ever been in one of those hotels?
Just sprinkle some pepper into your toilet.
Where you made the mistake of checking into a motel where your door opens to the outside. The outside. And you like, wait a minute, I'm on the ground floor. My door opens to the outside. And that means that when a car pulls up in the parking lot, they're 6 feet from my bed. The lights are on, shining in my room as though it's a police search. The floors are always incredibly hard because they put indoor-outdoor carpeting on the floor of the hotel rooms, right, with no foam padding. It's really hard and cold or hot. There are two things that really terrible motels have that the Four Seasons, the Ritz-Carltons, for some reason don't have. The really cheap motels have the best air conditioning. You turn on that air conditioning, you can be storing meat. No problem. Oh, you want to store some meat? No problem. Then the other thing they have is superior internet, Wi-Fi, perfect Wi-Fi. I have been in expensive five-star hotels, I'm happy to report, that have terrible air conditioning. Just god awful. And I have to call down to the front desk. And by the way, they all set their thermostats centrally. And if it's too cold for, no, if it's too hot for you, you call to the front desk and you say two magic words, which they will do. I need the temperature lower in my room. And let's say they have it at 68. Suddenly it'll be at 60. You'll see it go down to 60. And I want the fan on all the time. The air conditioning unit has a fan, but it goes off and on randomly as best I can tell, maybe by a thermostat, maybe by a timer. I don't know, but I always want that fan on. I want the white noise. Plus, I need the ventilation in order to breathe comfortably. I need that ventilation. And they'll do it. It only took me, this many years to realize that it's controlled from the front desk. But the coolest video to do this tonight because you're bored. You're not doing anything. You're listening to me. You go to YouTube and you search hotel thermostat or hotel thermostat adjustment, and you will see that, yes, they have put a governor on those thermostats, and you can see a video on YouTube which shows you how to easily override it. It's a sequence of buttons on the thermostat, and immediately you control the thermostat, and you can set it wherever you want. You just have to push them in a different sequence, which is not going to come on the card in your hotel room. You're not going to get that card. Not available. The other thing that's changed the economics of hotels, they used to make a fortune off of you buying dirty movies. The porn channels on hotel rooms where you paid extra for the movie, you'd watch, you know, a movie for $12 that you could get for free someplace else, and a porn movie or, you know, 6 hours of porn for $12 or $15. Nothing I would know about, but you would know about it. Well, they don't get that revenue anymore because of the internet. Because of the internet, you see whatever you want for free, and they're not making money on that. You know who else has had a dramatic change in their economics? Oh my gosh, this is like a big deal, is freaking Google. What's happened to Google is they used to make their money by search engine optimization, where you'd search for things, and it would land on sponsored accounts, and they'd get revenue share every time you went to a sponsored account. What AI has done is it's eliminated that search. When you search on Google now, it goes to an AI search and you can see, you know, I want more details. It's all underneath, right? Where you, right underneath the search bar, you see AI results. Well, that killed Google's search engine optimization revenue, their SEO. Their SEO revenue killed by AI, just like what happened to newspapers. What? What do you mean? There was a time when newspapers just minted money. It was insane how much those guys made. And they've seen a 60% decrease in readership in the past 10 years and about a 60% decrease in revenue. And all over the country, there were daily newspapers that are now out once a week just on Sunday, or maybe two or three times a week, and no more home delivery. And you walk by a newsstand, you see any newspapers? Not in most cities, because in most cities there aren't any. Big cities, Chicago, New York, L.A., big cities, you'll see a newspaper or two, maybe. But mostly they have disappeared. And you're thinking, well, people are on the internet reading. No, that's not what it is. That's not what it is. It's not what's killed the newspapers. What's killed the newspapers is the most annoying thing that you and I had to do with a newspaper, which was place a classified ad. There was nothing more annoying than having to place a classified ad and count each letter, space it correctly, make sure it wasn't too much or too little, get the words exactly right. It would take you a day to place a half-inch classified ad in a newspaper. Yeah, and then you had to submit it, and then they had to accept it, and then you had to pay in advance. Before you knew the classified ad was going to work or not, you had to pay in advance for that classified ad. Craigslist. When Craigslist came into being, where you and I could place a classified ad saying anything we wanted, with any number of words that we wanted, with any illustrations that we wanted, for $5, ease of use, placed it, and it popped on there immediately. It is Craigslist that destroyed the economy of newspapers, because newspapers made all their money from the classified ads. They made all the money. So much money that for decades, the classified ads of the Los Angeles Times grossed more than every radio station in Los Angeles combined. Just their classifieds. We're coming up on 11 o'clock on the East Coast, 8 o'clock on the West Coast. Walter Sterling, every damn Sunday night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Snow days, snow days, snow days. Spend your hungover days with Sterling every damn night.
All right, Walter M. Sterling, Sunday night, coast to coast. It's exciting. We feel the power of radio. I am so jealous of you in the 18-wheeler, especially if you're alone. It has been my experience that it's not good to work with a partner. Even if you started out great, and even if each partner is honest, there's always some problem. There's a rhythm problem. There's a volume problem. There's a choice of music problem. And that means that for your entire workday, you have to pretend to get along with somebody. It's a very unnatural thing that most of us have to do. If we're working in a store, a retail shop, if we're working in an auto dealership or an 18-wheeler, the worst part is we have to work with other people. One of the reasons that I've always been a big proponent of working at home is that I don't have to see anybody. I don't have to talk to anybody. I want you to consider this. When you're at work, if you go to work, if you're working in a salon, a nail parlor, a barbershop, or any retail store, you are unnaturally put in with other people to work with. It's not a natural selection. We're just told, you're going to stand here, you're going to work with Joe. Joe's been here a long time, he can give you good advice. Well, then you go to Joe for good advice, and if he doesn't like you, he'll either give you bad advice, worst case, or no advice. If you consider what happens at work, where is the trouble? Is that you don't understand the task? No. You don't like the product? You don't like the company? No, that's not it. The problem is three or four other people at work who are a pain in the butt. It's one or two or maybe three other people that you avoid all day at work. The one who smells bad. The woman who wears bad cologne. The person you go by their office and they always want to talk. You don't want to talk, but they always want to talk and you don't have time to talk. And but they're in a superior position. They have management wired up and we're stuck with this, right? Whereas if I work at home, my esoteric challenge is the dishwasher. My existential threat is the dishwasher. Has somebody else emptied it? I hope. Has somebody else filled it? I hope. The worst is if I fill the dishwasher and I have completely filled it and it's ready to go and I start hearing dishes clanking. I hear something happening in the dishwasher that should have not be happening. Something is happening that should not be happening in the dishwasher. And what is it? Oh, yes, it is my wife rearranging the dishes so that they're right. She has in her head, as all women do, a map of how the dishwasher should look when it's filled up. It is not a map that she shares, nor is it a map that I was born with. I don't have her map. But she rearranges it to make her happy. If I run the dishwasher the way I had it, the dishes look fine. If we run it the way she has it, the dishes look fine. There was no need to rearrange the dishes. And yet. Now, the way to have no contact with the dishwasher, the way to make sure that nothing is happening in the dishwasher is to say to teenage daughter, would you please empty the dishwasher before dinner? I'll get to it. You would think I was asking her to farm. You'd think I was asking her to plow the fields. Just empty the damn dishwasher. Oh, I'll get to it. I promise. Oh, my God. But you don't have these problems, do you? No, of course not. But the jock mentality is one of the driving forces in our culture, in our American tradition, that the quarterback in high school was a star in high school. He got the best girls. He got the worst grades. It didn't matter. He was the football hero. And this, of course, has come down through the ages to all of us to this time. Our president this week pardoned four players. Former New York Jets player has been pardoned by President Trump on Thursday. Hall of Famer Jets defensive lineman Joe Flacco was among five players who were pardoned by the president in 1993, Klecko pleaded guilty to perjury after lying to a federal grand jury that was investigating insurance fraud, according to ESPN. In addition to Klecko, former NFL players Nate Newton, Jamal Lewis, Travis Henry, and the late Billy Cannon received pardons as well. Similarly, last year, Trump pardoned former New York Mets legend Daryl Strawberry of tax evasion and drug charges. I don't know if these people were in jail or if those or they had served their time, and then he pardoned all of the charges so they would not have a felony on their life. A little late for some of them. I didn't mean it that way. Yes, I know one died, but the other one seems to have happened in the early 90s. We charge people with a lot of wacky stuff, and then we don't charge other people with other wacky stuff. You heard the horrible story this week. A girl comes home from college, visits her dad in Texas, and they start arguing over Trump. They start arguing over the president, and he shoots her in the face. He shoots her, and she's dead. But the part that's like, what? No charges were filed against him. They didn't charge him with anything. Now, I didn't read the details or get the details on how come he wasn't charged. He was an alcoholic. He had recently slipped. Don't know if he was drunk when he shot the girl. The story is that they were both examining a gun. They were both looking at a gun. That's all. He didn't mean to shoot her. He didn't know it was loaded. Well, there are a couple problems there. I can't imagine a gun owner, even a drunk one, storing a gun and not knowing if it's loaded. Gun storage 101, you will find out if it's loaded before you put it away, and you will take the ammunition very far from the gun. You don't want the ammunition anywhere near the gun, because that is how the 11-year-old will get shot. I don't care where you hide that gun. Anywhere in the house, your kid knows where that gun is and knows how to get to it no matter what you have done. Therefore, it is very important that the ammunition be very far from the gun. But this is an incredible story. Yeah, that's what I said. I said this poor Texas father, an alcoholic, recently slipped, arguing with his college-age daughter about Trump. You know which side each had. And he shot her and killed her. No charges filed. I mean, no charges filed. But that's what happened. Apparently, they were examining the gun, looking at the gun. He didn't know it was loaded. It was an accident. And therefore, there were no charges filed. But that's the deal with jocks. They can too often do anything and get away with it. And for years, if an NFL player beat a girl, beat his wife, he'd get suspended for like 3 days. Finally, Roger Goodell a few years ago said, you know, I'm not really handling this right. In my opinion, if a man hits a woman, that should be the end of his career. He goes to jail for the rest of his life. Hits a woman, goes to jail the rest of his life. There is no reason for it, no explanation for it. There's nothing okay about it. And it's a tragedy all the way around, especially if the wife woman continues her relationship with that man. Whatever was going on in her brain, whatever he was doing, for that to go on, it's inexcusable. We can agree on this, right? I'm Walter Sterling, and this is Sterling every damn Sunday night.
Sterling! Sterling every damn night.
Sterling across the USA.
Every damn Sunday night. Good evening. Walter M. Sterling on this radio station. Every damn Sunday night. Yes, right? Nothing else. They had nothing else to do. I was in Walmart, which I do too often. If I did it once a year, it would be too often. And you know, there are three types of Walmarts. There is the ghetto Walmart, where there are shootings at 11 o'clock. You can hear the babies crying at 11 o'clock at night, and you can hear the gunshots. No, really. And then there's the odd Walmart. There's some Walmarts that are honey badger Walmarts. They are in buildings that were not built for Walmart. If it's built for a Walmart, that's a different experience than if it was built later or they moved into some place that had failed. They don't have enough room and it's not in the right shape. I went into a a Walmart that had a lot of stuff, but when I went to the grocery section, there was no meat because they didn't have refrigeration for meat. Now, I knew it had been a different store before they took it over, and so they made a decision that it was all right to have groceries with no meat. That was that particular Walmart. I've also noticed a lot of Targets are pretty crummy with meat if they have a food section. I never buy meat in those places or fish. Do you? No. It's the only time I go to the expensive supermarket or the fancy supermarket. I'll get my meat and my fish at the fancy supermarket. I don't know. It feels better. Would you agree? But I'm in this Walmart. Oh, and then there's a Walmart, ghetto Walmart, strange Walmart, and Nirvana Walmart, where your feet don't stick to the floor, where all of the fruits and vegetables are shiny, and they haven't been squeezed by dozens of five-year-olds walking by. And you go to the deli section, the deli counter, and it's open, and they're cooking things. They're actually preparing foods. I'm like, what? This is impossible. That's the challenge. That's when it's interesting. But I'm in this Walmart, and I load up the cart, and I'm very happy. I've shopped well. I've carefully selected what I needed. I didn't buy too much. And I get to the cashier, and I take out my phone because I have a Apple wallet with my credit cards on the Apple wallet. And I go to buy the food. And he says, we don't take tap. We don't have a tap system. I can't tap my phone at Walmart and get a transaction done. No. I said, but I use my app to get food delivered at home. I can get food delivered at home from my app, but I can't tap. No, there's no tapping. You're kidding. Well, they had to take the cart, put all the stuff back. I went to the car. I didn't have any of my cards with me. I didn't think that was a good idea for some reason. I had pictures of everything, but that wouldn't work. I couldn't tap. No place did I think that, no time did I think Walmart would be the place where I couldn't tap, right? You figured that they are the largest corporation in the world. Do you realize that? Not some oil refinery in China. Walmart has the highest revenue of any company in the world. Not General Motors, not Toyota. Not a Chinese refinery. Nope. Walmart. Number one. Not store. Corporation. They don't take tap. Okay. I also figured out with Walmart that home delivery erases the savings. Because with home delivery, I have to put in a minimum of $35 order. And I have to spend like $12 a month to be a member of their club or their frequent something. And then I have to tip the guy. Well, even at a $5 tip, even though I'm cheap and just give him $5 tip or give her a $5 tip, what that does is it wipes out my savings. Because really, at Walmart, what are the real savings? Maybe 50 cents here, 5 cents here, 20 cents here. It may add up to $4 or $5 an order compared to at a, quote, normal supermarket, but it's wiped out with home delivery. My life has gotten to the sad point where I actually know these things. I should be, let me tell you. There was a time, maybe you too, where I was earning a little more money and I needed my driver's license renewed. And there was a kid in my office who would do errands and help out. And I said to him, would you go down and get my driver's license renewed? Yeah, sure, no problem. I'll give you $20 to do it. Nah, you don't have to do that. I had guys to do stuff. Now I'm the guy who does everything. I do everything. One of the best things I learned having to do everything on the TikTok store. Have you seen this stuff you pour in your drain and it makes a little volcano and wipes out everything in that drain and the water then starts going right through and you figured that was a scam and you should figure it was a scam. I have three daughters. Do you know what our bathroom drain is like? Do you have any idea what that's like? It is clogged constantly because they insist on doing what? Shampooing their hair. How dare they shampoo their hair? Now I'm on TikTok looking at fit checks and I see I keep getting these ads for a drain cleaner and it's $9 for two jars. You pour it in and it explodes and the drains instantly clear out. I've poured a lot of things into my bathtub drain, and it never instantly goes out. I've always had to, at some point, call the guy. My 13-year-old daughter will go, call the guy, Dad. You can't do it. Call the, you need a guy. The guy comes, $115 later, the bathtub is cleared out. Now I get this TikTok store chemical. Always dangerous. Who knows what happened? Who knows where it came from? What part of China did this come from? I pour it in the bathtub drain, which is always backed up. 2-3 inches of water sitting there every day after a shower. And that's a problem. It's not just, the real problem, it leaves soap film on the bath mat. And I'll step on the bath mat and I'll be ready to slip. And I can't take a shower. It's too slippery. You don't want to hear. It's just, when you have daughters, there are things you didn't know that you don't want to know. You stand on the wall of that bathtub, and there is no protection. You don't want to be the guy on that wall, knowing what those girls have done to the bathtub drain. Whatever it is, they always pretend that it wasn't me. I didn't do that, Dad. Susie did that. I didn't do it. Mom did that. No one takes responsibility for what happens in the bathtub drain in a house with three daughters, do they? Never do they take responsibility. Nor if I said to them, would you scrub out the bathtub? Later, Dad. Never happens. Will you empty the dishwasher? Yeah, I'll get right to it. Never happens. Will you put gas in the car? Yeah, next time I take it out, I'll do that. Never happens. Those are the challenges of our life. I get this brown paper wrapped shipment. No return address. Brown paper wrapping, really. I open it up and, oh my gosh, it's the drain cleaner has arrived in my home. The television star, the TikTok star has arrived in my home. I go to the bathtub and I do what it says to do. I pour it right into the drain and I figure it's just going to sit there, nothing. A little explosion. It drains. That was 3 months ago with the daughter's home. And that water is draining constantly every day. No problem. $9, not $190 for the plumber, $9 from the TikTok shop. And my drain for the first time in this house is draining. You just never know. You just never know. It's random with the TikTok shop. I am sure you have bought things at the TikTok shop, and hopefully you have no regrets. You're listening to Sterling every... Listen to me. You're listening to Sterling every damn Sunday night.
They tried to cancel poor Sydney Sweeney because she said she had great genes. They said she was promoting white supremacy, but we all knew they were full of beans.
1, 2, 3, 4, we all want to see some more.
Now we've got itsy-bitsy teeny-weeny lingerie from Sydney Sweeney that we saw for the first time today. Itsy-bitsy teeny-weeny lingerie from Sydney Sweeney. If you don't like it, you're probably...
Good evening, Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday night, WalterSterlingShow.com. WalterSterlingShow.com is the website where you can learn everything about the show, but more importantly, you can download a Midnight Misfit membership card, and you don't fit in. That's why you're listening. If you were normal, you'd be listening to FM. Well, in many cities, we're on FM, like KMBZ-FM in Kansas City. But you're lucky that I'm the host and not a normal host. A normal host would expect a lot from you. A normal host would expect you to listen for hours and hours of them screaming at the Democrats and imagining that that's entertaining. And then every ratings period, their ratings go down. And they go, gee, you know, it's because we're on AM. No, it's because your show sucks. That's why you're going down. They imagine, I'm telling you, this is a radio fantasy. These guys expect that if they got on FM, all of their problems would be solved. None of their problems would be solved. It would just take a bad show and put it on a different band, and it would get the same results. You and I talk about, if I were to meet you for lunch, what would we talk about? We talk about your kid, your car, strange things happening at the house, maybe your marriage if you're married. If you're not married, why aren't you married? And your job for about 8 seconds. Yeah, my boss is annoying. Yeah, I have a great boss. That's it. And that's what I talk about. I don't see why that's so exotic, but apparently it is. My middle child, who's 20, my Meredith. My Meredith is a very interesting person because if you met her, you would think that she's a very interesting person, but she is the sweetest girl you could ever meet. She has very complex theories about her cat, very interesting theories about her cat, which means she thinks a lot about her cat. Is this comfortable for her? Is this good? We got a cat bed. We got a cat bed for this cat. And this immediately, the cat knew it was her bed, went right to it, went to sleep. She knew that was her bed. Loved the cat. At the same time, my 20-year-old has a tattoo or two. They're nice, sweet little princessy tattoos. Nothing scary, not a sleeve, no strange swords, flowers, cats, all of that. You would expect nothing from this girl in terms of tattoos, really. And a septum, a nose thing, a nose ring. God, I hate those. I really do hate those. Because, you know, if it's in the cartilage, they really can't take it out. The cartilage doesn't grow back. The ones on the side, you can have a side nose ring. I don't know what they call them. I don't want to know. But she's beautiful. And I'm like, why would you do this? You don't need this. You came out perfect and you don't need this. She's going to Brooklyn College. And I'm happy about that. The people who go to Brooklyn College, they're like gangsters. They're in the mob. The minute you say you went to Brooklyn College, you're in Brooklyn College, you're in. You're fine. You are protected. So she's going to Brooklyn College, and then she says, I'm taking the next semester off. All right, she's going to take a semester off. And then she's, when are you coming home? Oh, I'm not coming home. What do you mean you're not coming home? No, I'm going to stay here. I'm living in Brooklyn. She has a roommate. She has a nice apartment. I like her apartment. And she is starting to make friends. Her cat's there. She knows the pharmacist across the street and the cell phone store. She is in a community. But I'm like, what do you mean you're staying in Brooklyn? Because in my mind, as her father, the only reason she was living in Brooklyn was to go to Brooklyn College. In her mind, she was going to Brooklyn College to live in Brooklyn. These are very different worldviews. And I said to her, you mean you're not coming home? No. You're staying in Brooklyn? You're like living in Brooklyn? Yeah, Dad, that's the idea. As in, that's the idea of being an adult, Dad. She's never coming home. One day when she loses those jobs, she'll come home, I'll bet you. And that's a very important point. You remember the day you realized your kids weren't coming home. Have you gotten to that point yet, or are you too young? I hope you're too young. That you go, wait a minute, they're not actually coming home. Then when they're 40, they lose their job and they need to come home because they can't pay their rent anymore. They can't keep up their mortgage. And that is a fascinating problem for grownups who have now lived alone for 15 or 20 years. The kids left long ago. Now they need to move back in. I have a suggestion for you. This is not the time for tough love. If you have a kid who's 40, 45, and they've lost their job, and they've tried to maintain for a couple months, but they can't, and they, especially if they have children, they didn't ask to be born. In my opinion, until you die, you have an obligation to house your children. If they're violent, knife-wielding drug addicts, that's different. But if they're broke, if they lost their job, if they did their best, come home. Let's make dinner tonight. Let's talk about a plan to get you what you want. You welcome them home because they've already devastated. They've already been devastated when they lost their work. And then they were devastated again when they realized they couldn't get another job. And they were devastated again when they realized they were going to have to leave where they lived or get evicted by the sheriff. And during all of this, they had to prepare their children and their spouse for the eventuality that they were going to have to move for bad reasons. They do not need a hostile parent. Because remember, it was your choice to have that child. shockingly, I couldn't believe who agrees with me. I'm watching a Judge Judy, and everything Judge Judy says is correct. And there's a 28-year-old girl and her mother, and the 28-year-old girl is living at home, and the mother's there, and the mother wants her out of the house. The mother wants to evict her own daughter. And Judge Judy says, how old is this girl?
28. She's 28.
She doesn't have to go anywhere. You decided to have this child. Not her choice. It's your responsibility forever to house and take care of that child and all of your children. That's what you signed up for. There's nothing that says at 18 or 21 they have to move out. They never have to move out unless you push them out. Don't do it. Whoa. That was the opposite of what I thought Judge Judy was going to say. But remember, Judge Judy was a family court judge. She was a family court judge in her real life. She knows about all of these domestic disputes. You got a kid who needs to come home. You say, hey, you know what? It's great. I need somebody to scrub the kitchen floor, do the bathtub, help out. You're welcome home. Walter M. Sterling on a Sunday night. Sunday, every damn Sunday, Walter M. Sterling.
Sterling, every damn night, from sea to shining sea.
Sterling, every damn Sunday night. It's exciting, isn't it? You can feel the excitement. Look, every other show, what does every other show do? They yell at the Democrats. What do? I yell at the things that you yell at. Then you just went through the spiritual test of Valentine's Day. How did you do? Did you do all right? Because the odds are bad. There are two things that every man dreads. They dread the birthday and they dread Valentine's Day. And the reason is that rarely do you get it right. And what do women tell you? Oh, I would just like some flowers. I don't even need a dozen. I just want one. One will be fine. And then did you ever make the mistake of doing that? One flower? Did you ever make that mistake? Or the ultimate mistake, did you make the mistake of getting the flowers at a supermarket? Because they know. If you get the flowers at a supermarket, it is worse than if you didn't get them at all. I would, some chocolate would be nice, right? Then you get like some chocolate, and how does that go?
Right.
It is one of the sprints. It is one of the hurdle tests that a boyfriend, husband receives twice a year, birthday and Valentine's Day. Birthday and Valentine's Day. If they say, I don't want anything, you do know that that's meaningless, right? They do want a lot. And if they say a dozen flowers would be fine, just some flowers, well, I'm telling you, you better start at 24. You better start your purchases at 24. You know, and then if you think you're at a point where you should get a little jewelry, you're not getting it off of Etsy. Don't get the jewelry from Etsy again, because she'll know. She will know. Your life is treacherous at this point, my friend. And if you have daughters, well, what do you do about that? If you have a daughter who doesn't have a boyfriend, what do? You get her a gift basket is what you do. And in that gift basket needs to be a card. And chocolate and flowers. You need to get her a nice little gift basket. That's what you need to do. But it's very tricky, because when a guy says, don't get me anything, he means it. If you say, hey, don't get me anything, you mean it. And that's not what women mean at all. It's just, you're just screwed. Yeah, you're just screwed. All right, Walter M. Sterling. Every Sunday night on this giant radio station, it's exciting for you and me personally. The weirdness of the Epstein story. There was a story 5 years ago that I'm like, wait a minute, why doesn't anybody remember this story? Because where the Epstein story is going is it's going beyond sex with underage girls. It's going to cannibalism. There's a lot of talk about pizzas, and that pizza might be code word for something they're going to eat, maybe a child. This is where I say, okay, it's just getting stupid. It's going into the realm of don't be ridiculous. But then I'm like, wait a minute. The premise is that the elites, this rich elite group of people, this elite group of people, one of the things they do, besides underage women, pedophilia, is that they're cannibals. And they're cannibals of children. And I'm like, it couldn't be stupider. There's no proof of any of that. And besides, our brains can't handle the possibility. But wait, remember the movie star, Armie Hammer? Remember why you haven't heard from him in years?
It's almost like a neutron bomb went off in my life, right? It killed all the people. It killed me. It killed my ego. It killed all the people around me that I thought were my friends that weren't. People called me a cannibal, and everyone believed them. They're like, yep, that guy ate people. It was bizarre. It was a crisis, a spiritual crisis, an emotional crisis. And the way I saw it was, I have two options here. I can either let this destroy me, or, to the point of your podcast, I can use this as a lesson. In terms of my career as an actor, I'm nowhere.
And he never will recover. That's the problem. The reason this story started is he left a voicemail for a girl he had recently met and said, you know, baby, I'm all cannibal. I'm all cannibal. And he leaves this psycho email saying that he's all cannibal. And probably he meant oral sex. But regardless of what he meant, this poor woman believed him and believed he was actually a cannibal and had cannibal instincts. And immediately his wife divorces him. She won't let him see the kids. The movies drop him. Agents drop him. Boom, you're gone, buddy. You are out of the circuit. Can you imagine? Let's say it's true. Let's say what he said was just, you know, it was a way of his expressing lust. Could you imagine having gone out with a woman two or three times and leaving a voicemail for her that says, you know, baby, I'm all cannibal. I'm a cannibal. I'm all cannibal. What the hell did he think was going to happen? Best case scenario, she just wouldn't talk to him again. Worst case scenario, that's what happened. He got the worst case scenario. Oh, my God. Yeah, so, and he was in they were in the Cayman Islands, which is always suspicious. So his family was vacationing in the Cayman Islands. His family all came home. And he stayed there. I think he had trouble leaving at that point. I think the cops wanted to talk to him to make sure he wasn't eating people who lived in the Cayman Islands. Armie Hammer. Yeah, you and I can't even imagine this life. You know, he's rich and this is his life.
9 o'clock in Los Angeles. And for the next three, you belong to me, baby. Humble Hive. On a tough enough Tuesday in L.A., baby. Scanning the horizons for smash records. Come on, Olympics.
The kazoo. Let's go. Come on. Let's go.
We'll be right back.
years of OK Radio repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Sterling every damn Sunday night.
Sterling every night. Lost in space. Mission control.
Dave Scott is a known Canadian. He's a great broadcaster. He's an expert on UFOs, metaphysics, Bigfoot, things crawling into your bed at night that you're not married to or fantasizing about. Dave Scott hosts a radio show called Spaced Out Radio, big hit radio show in Canada, available for you right now on YouTube, Spaced Out Radio. I have an alternate theory. Would you like to hear it?
I want to hear it, my friend.
I think that the government is aware of the heavy load of mythology attached to, do we have aliens? Do we have captured UFOs? And they put on the brakes in 1948 and said, let's never answer that question. Because as long as we don't answer that question, we're like the Catholic Church. We live in myth and mystery that gives us enormous power. If we don't tell them there's nothing there, buddy, their imaginations will make the nothing there much bigger than any reality possibly could. Because I keep being stumped by this scientist who has repeatedly said it is physically impossible for any other civilization to reach us. And that is my dilemma, Mr. Scott.
Well, there's a couple avenues to go here. And one is that I told you so, and one, not to you, but to the UFO world. And the other one is, I think that's very narrow-minded for any scientist to say that there aren't civilizations that are well much more advanced than we are out there in the stars to say that they don't have the technology to get here. I think that is just illogical and ill-thinking. But the other part about it is, the I told you so part, is this. About 5-6 years ago on my show, I started really looking into the UFO world and all of these conspiracies that, you know, seem to come together. This is when the term UAP instead of UFO came out, UAP being unidentified aerial phenomena. And that's what the government was using to describe UFOs or anything unexplained in the sky. And what I said, Walter, was that there has to be some UFO Pandora's box sitting hidden in the Pentagon somewhere, you know, that is just locked up with the key thrown away that they will never open. In that box, we know that there are the answers to everything that we want, whether or not it was aliens at Roswell, whether or not Kecksburg in Pennsylvania was a UFO instead of some de-Glock Nazi belt, whether Eisenhower in 1953 met with aliens and traded humans for technology, which a couple of researchers believe actually happened during a UFO landing. There are so many stories out there that have been combined that they have to be stored somewhere. That is obviously the Pentagon. Former Assistant Secretary of Defense and Intelligence, Chris Mellon from the Mellon family, actually came out about a year ago and said that there was, what he believed, a Pandora's box of UFO information within the Pentagon that is sealed, will never be open. And they're trying to grab a crowbar to try and open this thing. And that's what the movement of disclosure is. So I think you are 100% right on that. I do believe that this Pandora's box exists. Whether or not it ever opens, probably not in our lifetime.
What if it is purposely empty? What if it is purposely empty to allow us to continue to imagine what's in it, which is much bigger than whatever could be in it?
Well, I think how they got around that, and I think you're probably right, okay? It probably is empty. And how did they empty it? Well, there are a lot of defense contractors out there, whether it's Raytheon, Lockheed Skunk Works, Boeing Skunk Works, Pratt & Whitney, McDonnell Douglas, you name it, that have these test areas. Now, it is believed that many of these private corporations have actually taken over the UFO information. And they are the ones playing scientists who are trying to reverse engineer craft. Maybe they have bodies. Because here's the thing. if it's in U.S. governmental hands, everything is valid to what we call a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request. Private companies that are contracted are not. You cannot FOIA Lockheed Martin. You cannot FOIA Boeing or Raytheon or name the defense company that is out there. So by putting it in these private corporations' hands, they have essentially not lied. We don't have any UFOs. We don't know what you're talking about. There's nothing here. Come search our closets. We got nothing hiding under the bed because they don't. They've already given it away.
To whom?
The private contractors.
Got it. You realize that for decades, Vietnam veterans were tortured with the fact that there was the belief that there were prisoners of war held in Vietnam. And the Vietnamese said, there are no prisoners of war here. There are none. And that's because they were in Cambodia. They were held in Cambodia and Laos. And therefore, the Vietnamese could say, we don't have any here, because they were being held in Laos and Cambodia. It's sort of like that, less horrible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think this subject is much deeper. We know that they are not allowed to talk about it. We know that presidents have said we're not allowed to talk about it. Jimmy Carter said it. Ronald Reagan sidestepped it. Obama said it. George Bush Jr. said it. Many others have said it.
But you know what Clinton said? Yeah, but you know what Clinton and Gore said?
Fill me in.
They were asked this question, and they looked at each other, and they looked at the camera, and the interviewer said, listen, we've spent a lot of time on this. Like, they were two little boys in the candy store. We spent a lot of time trying to find these files, to look at these things. There's nothing there. They said it years ago, Clinton and Gore together. They were saying, no, there's nothing there. We have spent a lot of time on it, and there's nothing there.
Well, they did. Both Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton were about the Rockefeller Initiative on UFOs. Hillary Clinton was photographed carrying the Rockefeller Initiative book regarding this subject of UFOs. They were very much into it. But yeah, from what I have heard is every president is read in on the UFO subject. There are certain subjects that are extremely taboo to talk about. Now, I'm not an expert at this. This is secondhand information. But from what I have heard, the UFO subject is one that they have to dodge. And we have to realize that there are some scary things about this. And it's not just aliens coming down. That's the least scary. It's what is it going to do to humanity? What's it going to do to the economy? What's it going to do to religion? And if COVID was a test on this, which it wasn't, I mean, COVID was real, but, you know, we can go through the semantics of the vaccination or anything like that. But what they saw, they didn't like, Walter. They didn't like watching how people were hoarding toilet paper or milk or meat. They didn't like all of that stuff. So when they saw how people were reacting towards COVID, the UFO people basically said, yeah, maybe we're not ready for this. Let's just try and sweep this subject back under the rug.
Do you have other news for us tonight, Dave Scott?
I do, actually. I have actually a very sad story. Okay. Longtime British ufologist, former Ministry of Defense researcher, Nick Pope.
That guy.
You may know him from Ancient Aliens.
Yes.
He's been on many radio shows. He was a contributor to Fox News when the UFO story started breaking in 2017. Well, very sad news, because Nick Pope actually came out on X today saying that he is suffering from stage 4, I believe it's esophageal cancer.
Esophageal.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I'm a sports journalist, not a science journalist.
Well, but I can't pronounce any sports guys' names.
Mm-hmm. Well, he came out and said that he is dying and that his time is limited. Thoughts and prayers are, he's very thankful for thoughts and prayers, but unfortunately, medically, that he has taken every route possible, but there's just nothing left. It's all on a timeline now. Now, Pope originally came out a number of years ago after working 21 years for the Ministry of Defense for the United Kingdom, and he was very much adamant about the UFO subject, that there was a big cover-up. Now, the thing with Nick is, you know, he was a scholar of this subject. I was not the biggest fan of his, but you know what? I respected his work because he was getting people talking about the subject of UFOs and what he knew, and from his contacts within the UFO world, and as well as the people who don't talk publicly about this. So it is a very sad day in the UFO world that Nick Pope announces that he doesn't have much time left.
Absolutely. And he, on Ancient Aliens, he always seemed sane. And I always found it interesting that both the head of defense for Canada and the head of defense for Great Britain would be very willing to talk about something they should have been debriefed on day one.
Well, you know what? It is a political masterpiece. You got to realize, outside of the United States, maybe Great Britain to an extent, but there isn't a large conversation happening in the world about this. You know, in Canada, for instance, because I can speak for Canada, okay, we have kind of this weird policy that if we don't talk about it, it doesn't happen. Okay, so that's why we haven't heard any.
I have the same policy with my wife.
Right. So, you know, we have to, you know, say thank you to the late Paul Hellyer and Nick Pope for being government officials and coming out and talking about this and bringing this subject to light.
Exactly. I agree. But that's sad about him because he was, first of all, he had the energy of a very young man, and therefore it's a very sad loss. And clearly he went through the television as a good guy. You can sort of tell. And anytime his voice was on the radio or he was on TV, you felt like this was a good guy and a guy who was striving and believing. And I thank you. All right, Dave Scott, how do we find you online?
SpacedOutRadio.com is my website. You can find our Walter M. Sterling Midnight Misfits UFO shirt there. You can listen to our podcast on YouTube or any major podcast network. Download it for free.
Very important point, Dave Scott, in Canada just made. You can find the Walter M. Sterling sweatshirt of me in a UFO at spacedoutradio.com/shop. I think that's something that you're going to need to do to make up for your crappy performance on Saturday with the couple of flowers. That's not going to do it, buddy. But the sweatshirt, there's your safe gift. Dave Scott, thank you for being on Sterling every damn night.
Boom, boom, Hollywood. Sterling every damn night.
Thanks very much, Walter. It's always great to be part of Sterling every damn Sunday, and I certainly hope the misfit listening right now had a wonderful Valentine's Day weekend, or as I like to call Valentine's Day, Single Awareness Day. The best part about today, of course, Sunday after Valentine's Day, is that chocolate is 50% off in most stores. Anyway, Valentine's, of course, makes people think about romantic movies, and before I go into our new movie review for today, which is Crime 101 from Amazon MGM Studios, I thought I'd remember just a few of the great movies that people associate with Valentine's Day, like When Harry Met Sally. It's possibly the ultimate rom-com. There's Pretty Woman. It's a popular feel-good romantic movie. Notting Hill. 10 Things I Hate About You was a popular teen rom-com with a great soundtrack on it. There's, of course, Bridget Jones's Diary. Crazy Rich Asians. Four Weddings and a Funeral. It's from Britain. It's kind of fun. Of course, other modern choices that are kind of popular, Sleepless in Seattle, The Princess Bride, Dirty Dancing, perhaps, sort of an alternative romantic thing in the gay world, Love, Simon, Always Be My Maybe is another charming contemporary romantic comedy. Perhaps La La Land appealed to some. Of course, I think of some of the great classic movies, too, as being wonderfully romantic. The original Wuthering Heights, with Merle Oberon and Laurence Olivier, I don't think can be matched, even though there's a new Wuthering Heights playing in theaters this weekend. I haven't seen it yet, but it's a little bit off the beat of the traditional story in a modern way. Of course, my favorite romantic movie of all time, the French film Jean Cocteau's La Belle et la Bête, Beauty and the Beast, which was made in 1946. Well, let's look at what's made some money this weekend. Send Help continues to be the number one box office hit. It's made $39 million so far, followed by the romantic comedy I talked about last week on this show. Solo Mio is movie number two in the country now. It's pulled in about $11 million since it opened. There's a French version of Dracula, that is to say a French-made Dracula that has come out. Luc Besson is the director. That's in third place at $6 million since it opened on Friday. Of course, the full numbers aren't in as we're going over the weekend. We can probably talk about it again next weekend, but those are the big numbers right now. So let's take a look at what's playing in the theaters right now. From Amazon MGM Studios, Crime 101. This is a Southern California heist movie starring Chris Hemsworth as a methodical jewel thief ready to quit, but who meets a high-end insurance broker played by Halle Berry, herself ready to throw in the towel at a job where she's not advancing. The two seem to weave in and out at various connection points, eventually planning a multi-million dollar job. Yet, there's a relentless and rather crumpled detective played by Mark Ruffalo who's hot on their trail along Highway 101. This despite conflicts in the police department and a wife that's about to leave him, played by Jennifer Jason Leigh, and a welcome return to the screen. Adding to the confusion, Walter, is a second thief, played by Barry Keoghan, hired by a crooked jewel buyer, played by the grizzly-faced Nick Nolte. If that weren't enough, Hemsworth falls for a girl that rear-ends him, accidentally. I should explain that. This is an automobile accident I'm describing. Played by Monica Barbaro. Now, she's gorgeous, beautiful brunette. So this movie is fabulously edited with brilliant segue transitions between shots. Perhaps it's a little long at 2 hours and 19 minutes, but Crime 101 is filled with action, and though a little violent at times, I just wish there was just a little bit more of Jennifer Jason Leigh. Next Sunday on this program, I'm going to talk about a new movie called How to Make a Killing, which stars Glenn Powell, Margaret Qualley, Ed Harris, Topher Grace, and Zach Woods. This is the story of a guy disowned at birth by his obscenely wealthy family, and so blue-collar Beckett Redfellow will stop at nothing to reclaim his inheritance, no matter how many relatives might stand in his way. That's next Sunday on this program. One more thing, you can find me on Facebook, Matthias Bombals Hollywood. That's M-A-T-I-A-S. B-O-M-B-A-L, apostrophe S, Hollywood, like the city. Matthias Bombals Hollywood on Facebook to find out more about the movies I've talked about here and other stuff that I'm doing that's fun with movies. Walter, I thank you as always for having me on this great program, Sterling, every damn Sunday.
They tried to cancel poor Sydney Sweeney. Because she said she had great genes. They said she was promoting white supremacy, but we all knew they were full of beans.
1, 2, 3, 4, we all want to see some more.
Now we've got itsy bitsy teeny weeny lingerie from Sydney Sweeney that we saw for the first time today. Itsy bitsy teeny weeny lingerie from Sydney Sweeney.
James Parker, and this is Florida Story. Thank you. All right, thank you. For our first Florida Story, we're going to St. Petersburg, Florida, more specifically, the Palm Haven Mobile Home Park. 57-year-old Florida woman is getting really sick of her neighbor's chickens pooping on her patio. So the next time the neighbor's over, she starts giving him a good cussing about all these chickens. These chickens are pooping on my patio all the time, pooping, leaving poop everywhere. The neighbor must have said something to make her mad, because then the 57-year-old Florida woman goes into her bathroom, comes out with a bucket of human urine, and throws it in the guy's face. And this isn't like hearsay or allegedly. She admitted to it when the cops showed up, and the cops also wrote in their report that the guy's face, the neighbor's face, was still wet and smelled of urine. And I know what you're asking. What is this Florida woman doing with a bucket of urine in her bathroom? The police report doesn't say. I think you should know better than to even ask a question like that. So shame on you, because now I want to know it, but I do not want to look it up. They might be into that. Who knows? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we have a 28-year-old Florida man, also in St. Petersburg. but he's not in a mobile home park. He lives with his 37-year-old boyfriend. Florida man says to his boyfriend that he really wants to have a guy that's uncircumcised. You know, the boyfriend is circumcised. And so that he should be allowed to sleep around. The boyfriend's like, I don't think that's anything more than just a loophole into you being promiscuous. And I prefer monogamy. He's like, well, that's not fair. You're circumcised and I prefer uncircumcised. So I should get to sleep around. Well, the foreskin debate torments our Florida man overnight. And he wakes up at 5:15 in the morning, fuming. He wakes up his boyfriend and he starts the argument over again. At some point, he gets so upset, he grabs his now ex-boyfriend by the throat and punches him in the face. So the boyfriend calls the cops. Cops show up. What's this all about? He punched me. Why'd you punch him? And he tries to explain to him that this is all some overheated debate about foreskin. But dude, you're still being charged with assault and battery. And good luck on the foreskin hunt. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer. What?
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, this is just a viral video. I invite you to look for this one. A 38-year-old Florida woman who is absolutely beautiful. She's a bartender. She got in a little fender bender in Madeira Beach, which is right outside St. Petersburg. Cops showed up. She smelled of alcohol, had slurred speech, unsteady on her feet when she was doing the sobriety test, the field sobriety test. She broke out in multiple ballet and Irish folk dance moves. As impressed as the cops were, that had no help in them trying to decide on whether or not she was drunk. But on the upside, she is beautiful and she's a fantastic dancer. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we go to Sarasota County, Florida, where a guy on his commute to work has seen this truck. Whenever traffic comes to a standstill, this dude will pull up on the sidewalk and drive along the sidewalk to the next intersection. So one day he films the truck doing it, sends it to the cops, and the cops set up a sting. And he actually does it again. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going to Orlando. At the Orlando Museum of Art, the FBI bust in and one of their little teams takes possession of some pieces in an art exhibit from Basquiat. You know that dude, Jean-Michel Basquiat? If you don't, it's just an artist who scribbles on trash and now it's worth millions. But they say some of these are forgeries, and one of them in particular is a painting that's on a FedEx box, which isn't too far-fetched, except this version of the FedEx box wasn't put into use by FedEx until 8 years after Basquiat's death. So that's kind of a telltale sign. And yes, I had to Google how to say Basquiat before the show. I'm an idiot. What do you want?
Don't
look at me like that. What do you think? I'm smart. For our next Florida story, we have a 35-year-old Florida man in Palm Bay, Florida. So he goes into the Walmart, and they have the cigarettes behind the counter there. And so he goes and he asks the cashier for a pack of smokes, and she goes and hands it to him. And he just starts to run out. And, you know, the security officers immediately hear the cashier going, "Hey, hey, hey." And so they stop him. "What are you doing?" He's like, "Nothing. I just wanted some smokes." And they're like, "Do you have some ID on you? Did you pay for those?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, I lost the receipt. My ID's in that backpack." And he pointed to a backpack that was out front. Like, I guess he was a homeless guy who just left his house or his belongings or whatever by a trash can out front. And so they're like, "Fine, go get your ID." And so he walks over to the backpack and then he just takes off running. So they go check in his backpack. And he actually did have his ID in there, idiot. And he also had a sawed-off shotgun that was illegal. So. But he did get the smokes. They caught up to him a little bit later. He went to jail. And he's 35, but he looks like he's 65. He is ate up. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Florida Stories is produced by Spring Rock. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
I told the witch doctor tune in the Sterling Show. I told the witch doctor tune in the Sterling Show. And then the witch doctor told me where to go. He told me,
"Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, Sterling every damn night. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, Sterling every damn night."
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the Owl and Dawn.
I'm
Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and here's an excerpt from my book, Flight of the Dragon Queen. Alizira turned toward me, placing her hands on my chest. You're not upset? No, why would I be? With one finger, I tilted her chin upward to meet my gaze, the moonlight reflected in her emerald eyes. Regardless, if this is all part of who you are, then I look forward to everything you're willing to share with me. Her eyes closed as I leaned down. I brushed my lips across hers with the faintest of touches, afraid if I pushed too far, she'd be summoned away again. No one appeared to interrupt us, and the gentle gesture paved the way for a more zealous kiss. She slid her palms over my shoulders, locking her fingers behind me, and her lips parted to welcome me inside. The sweet taste of honeyed wine on her tongue drove me wild with desire. I tightened my grasp on her waist, pressing her body to mine. As I explored her luscious mouth, I threaded my free hand through her thick curls. When I grazed the bare skin at the base of her neck, she shuddered. Stay with me tonight, she purred against me in between kisses. I want to be with you. My heart thudded until I thought it might explode. I couldn't believe what I'd heard. Are you sure? We haven't known each other for very long, and I don't want you to think I know all I need to know about you, Caleb. Her fists knotted in the collar of my shirt, and her hips rolled toward me. And when I shivered in the corner of my cold, terrible cell, thoughts of you kept me warm. I imagined what it would be like to be safe in your arms, to feel your body touching mine. She traced the edge of the shirt, her fingertips leaving a blazing trail across my skin. And I wondered if you thought the same things about me. Her words aroused all sorts of provocative memories. I did. Believe me, I did. I took her hand and kissed the top of it. I suppose it's in poor taste to refuse a queen's invitation in her own castle. Alizira tossed her head back and laughed, a wide grin spreading over her face. Let's go inside. The view from the balcony will be even more spectacular at sunrise. A jumble of feelings, from disbelief to red-hot lust, clouded my mind as I followed her back through the doors. Inside her chambers, she used an iron rod to stoke the embers inside a fireplace. Once she had rekindled the flames, she walked the perimeter of the room, extinguishing all the lamps hanging from the walls. When the last of the light came from the dancing fire, she stood in front of it and beckoned to me. I walked slowly, taking in the sight of her exaggerated hourglass figure silhouetted against the orange blaze. Alizira reached for the bottom of my shirt and gave it a yank. Grateful the darkness camouflaged some of my nervous blushing, I pulled off the lightweight garment and let it flutter away. Before it hit the floor, she swanned back into my arms and guided me down for another kiss. The heat emanating from the hearth mingled with the fervor building between us. As her chest flattened against me, the plush fabric of her dress rubbed across my bare skin, teasing me with what lay beneath. Without relinquishing control of her lips, I skimmed my palms over the swell of her hips, drawing them up her sides and to the front of her body. Pliant flesh bulged over the top of her snug bodice, begging for attention. I cupped it through the thick velvet, and a soft moan escaped from her mouth into mine. She steered me toward the ties holding her bodice in place. I unfastened the knot, and the weight of her chest helped me loosen the laces. Dipping my hands inside the open flaps, I slid the gown off her shoulders. She pulled away to slip her arms out of the sleeves, and the dress cascaded off her body. Carefully, she stepped out of the burgundy puddle, removing her embroidered slippers as she did so. The roaring blaze in the fireplace bathed her in an ethereal glow, exposing every inch of her to me. Oh my, I think I'd better stop here for tonight, but you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, Flight of the Dragon Queen, which is available at Amazon. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
WalterMSterling@gmail. I answer every email. I've got a pretty good website, WalterSterlingShow.com, WalterSterlingShow.com. And the greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help.
Sterling is brought to life by these creative people. Music director Lee Harris. Technical wizard Dave Scalish. Operations Frank Canal. Sound mixers Sean Cicero, Sean Walsh, Andrew Torres. Voice actors James Parker, James Copeland, that's me, Randy Thomas, Charlie Van Dyke, Charles Van Sant, Robert Clotworthy, Peter Thiel, Dan and Becky Gaffney, Erotic Thrills Thea Landon, Class Act Jill Brooke and Matus Bumball, Baked Goods Steve and Selena JB Bakery, Quantum Physics Dave Scott, a Canadian, Ross Coulthart, an Australian, Skullduggery Vic Ferrari, Blessings Father James Drucker, Meteorologist Dr. Dave Iser, Writer Jerry the Writer, Business Guidance Craig Kitchen, Program originated by Chris Olivero, Long-suffering executives David Yadgroff and Greg Stalker. With respect, Alex Bennett, Sally Jesse Raphael, and Gene Shepard.